Hey, yo, lovely listeners. This is Serena. As you know, this is season 3, and we are coming to a close. Ergo, what are we going to do next? Well, dear listeners, that's where you have the power. Please go to the description or the show notes of this episode. There you will find a link to a form in which you can voice your opinion and use your power for your own benefit. Please let us know what you would like to hear from us next, because we would love to keep creating content that you're invested in, and we loved hearing from you. So again, please go into the show notes or the description of this episode and fill it out. Let us know. We love hearing from you. I love you so much. I love you more than everything ever. Here's the show. Hey, Tyler!
Yeah, Serena?
It's over, Tyler!
Wait, no, it can't be over. We're only on the 4th episode of this season.
It's over, Tyler! I have the high ground!
You underestimate my power!
Don't try it! You were the chosen one! It was said you could destroy the Fire Nation, not join them. It was you who would bring balance to the Force, not leave it in the darkness.
I hate you.
You were my brother, Tyler. I love you. I'm Serena Schreifels.
And I'm Tyler Strandberg.
And you're listening to the Revenge of the, Avatar the Podcast.
Do it.
Yep, yep. On this podcast, we watch the Nickelodeon show Avatar The Last Airbender and analyze the plot, themes, and characters.
At the end of each episode, we'll talk about who our favorite character was, as well as give the episode a rating on a scale of 1 to 10.
You're listening to the Avatar Podcast.
Yep, yep. By the way, my lightsaber would totally be purple.
Ooh, I really like the classic blue lightsaber.
Oh, I see that
but
for
blue
you.
Is also my favorite color,
I
so.
I see that for you, though.
That's just me.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Aaron would have a green lightsaber.
I think so, too.
Yes, it's perfect.
Oh, God. We are just like the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, we are our own Jedi clan.
I got to stand. I really have to stand.
Do.
Today in the Avatar world, we will be talking about the 4th episode of Book 3 titled Sokka's Master. Yeah.
Do you guys want to know kind of what happened? Because I'll tell you.
Maybe. I think that might be beneficial to the goal we're trying to accomplish here.
You know what, Tyler? I think that that's fair, and I'm going to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. After the rest of Team Avatar saves a town from destruction by a meteorite, Sokka feels left out as he is the only person in the group unable to bend. He finds a swordsmaster named Pian Dao to help further his skills as a warrior, forging his own sword out of the meteorite. He and his friends realize just how important he is to their group. Meanwhile, Iroh devises a plan to escape prison and starts a bodybuilding career in secret.
I hate that you added career to that. Jesus. Starts a bodybuilding career. I'm so mad.
That's originally what I thought when I saw the text.
No, you're fine. I thought you were just doing that for the meme.
Oh, I did it for the meme.
Oh, my God. You're the worst.
Thank you.
Okay, this episode premiered on Nickelodeon on October 12th, 2007, and was written by Tim Hendrick.
Let's dive into plot and themes and stuff.
I'm ready. Let's go.
And the first thing is and stuff, the things to know. Throughout the episode, there are many designs that include the White Lotus, a secret society Iroh belongs to that we found out in the desert, and designs inspired by the Lion Turtle, a creature that was noted by Aang in a book in the library to signify that it could be important later.
That was, honestly, I'm so impressed.
Thank
Every
you.
Day, I'm just more and more impressed.
Thank you. I'm a voiceover artiste.
You are a voiceover artiste.
Hire me, please. I am unemployed.
The joke and subsequent design of the armor Aang wears in the weapon shop is inspired by the creator's frustrating experiences of working on the Avatar toy line and the incessant requests they perceived to put Aang in inappropriate armor. It also represents much of what the creators didn't connect with in the bizarre world of anime.
Marion Cotillard is shaking. She is quivering in her boots. Her career is under attack by you specifically. The weapon store shopkeeper resembles Iroh and is even voiced by the same voice actor.
I did not even notice.
I didn't either, honestly, the first time around. And then I came across this fun little fact on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. And then when I watched it a second time, I was like, oh, yeah, he does look like Iroh.
Hmm. Oh, I'm going to have to, like, rewatch that, like, a fourth time. Because I still didn't see it.
You watched this episode 3 times before?
Oh, no. Well, I've, like, seen Avatar before. So, I mean, just, like, I'm just, like, condensing
in
general.
Wait, so you didn't watch this episode before?
No, I did because Sokka's hot.
Okay. I mean, you should be watching it before because it's your job.
Oh, my God.
Not just because Sokka's hot, but...
It's my job to look at Sokka being hot? Thank you.
I accept that. If it's my job to look at Zuko being hot.
Yes. It's all our jobs because I love these guys.
It's all our jobs because. Next fun fact.
Where are we at? Oh, Robert Patrick, Piandao's voice actor, played the T-1000 in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. The T-1000 could literally make its arms into swords, paralleling what Piandao says to Sokka when comparing the sword to a long, very sharp arm.
When Piandao tells Sokka about imagining the sword as a part of his own body, mirrors what Suki told him about the fan in the first season. And Zuko said something similar to Lee in Zuko Alone, adding that his two swords are not separate, but two halves of a same deadly weapon.
That's way cool.
Very cool and really exciting.
It makes me want to learn how to throw knives.
Like May?
Yes!
God, May is so bad.
Oh, I love her. The waterfall Piandao has Sokka paint is heavily based on the Gullfoss waterfall in Iceland, famed for its rainbows. Prior to beginning the final season, the show's creators traveled to Iceland. Ooh, that would be fun. Gathering inspiration for what the Fire Nation landscape would resemble.
When Toph is playing with the meteorite rock at the end of the episode, one of the shapes she forms is the Nickelodeon logo at the time of the episode's airing.
What?
Yeah, it's like the little splat logo.
That's what that was?
Yeah, it was the Nickelodeon logo. Bam, 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 bam.
Oh!
All right, let's dive into the theme of this episode, which is self-worth.
Ooh! It is implied that Sokka is not worth as much as the other members of Team Avatar, or that he can't contribute to a fight because of his lack of bending.
It's those three girls from Omashu. We can take them. 3-on-3.
Actually, Toph, there's 4 of us.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't count you. You know, no bending and all.
I can still fight!
Okay, 3-on-3 plus Sokka.
We know that this specific view of the world from a certain character who is projecting very unhealthy standards onto Sokka is wrong, as we have seen him fight alongside the rest of the gang multiple times, but the problem has clearly been brought up by other characters and still exists within the Avatar world.
This can also be implied that non-benders are not seen as having as much worth as benders. A theme that is later explored in The Legend of Korra!
Which, like, a little bit of outside knowledge, there was huge discourse within the fan community at the time of this show, and, like, this could be one of the reasons for writing this episode.
Wait, so when you say discourse, what do you mean by that?
So there was a lot of people arguing, like, are benders, I don't want to say worth more, but it was definitely, like, you can do more as a bender mm-hmm. than you could as a non-bender. Or, like, people who are benders are, like, better than people who are not benders.
Gotcha.
You know? Mm-hmm. Or, like, they're more useful or something. That was a big thing. Where I was like, Sokka's the least useful of the group because he's not a bender.
No!
I know!
That's not right.
No, it's Toph because she sucks.
No, I love Toph.
No, that's not true. They all have their equal worth for different ways.
Oh, my God. Put that on a shirt, too.
Well, like, we've already highlighted in the many different ways how Sokka is useful, is of use and value to the team. An instance like the meteorite where he literally can't do anything really shows off how even though he has specific skills that the others can't do, he still feels inadequate.
Mm-hmm. He still feels as if he isn't good enough because of his lack of bending, something that the outside world and society has already pressured him to believe, putting higher value on benders and their unique abilities.
And this episode does a good job of presenting these problems as well as using the meteorite as a device to launch the story. Mm. Of course, the benders are able to resolve the problem more effectively. They each specialize in manipulating a specific element, and they're dealing with a natural disaster.
Sokka quite literally is not equipped to fight a meteorite, a natural disaster, with only his club.
I love how, like, they're all like, I got this, and Sokka's just standing there with his little water tribe club, and he's like, what should I do? And it's like, buddy, you're so useful, but like,
you literally can't
do anything right now.
You have to save Momo.
I'm sorry, you, a specific individual with no equipment, cannot fight this fire.
BB.
And then he's like, I can't do anything.
Sokka. But think of the difficulty that we, like, experience all the time trying to fight forest fires, right? There's countless tactics of trying to put the fires out, and it still takes months to do so.
Yeah, and I mean, like, our world has the equipment to do so. You know, we have, like, all of these special, like, ways of putting things out and helicopters.
Oh, my God. Imagine Sokka piloting a helicopter.
Stop. He's too powerful as he is. I don't want to give him more power.
I do.
Ugh.
Now, imagine if Benders had to put out a forest fire. They'd be able to do so with ease because they have the natural skills to solve that specific problem.
Look, the point is the episode does a good job of throwing Sokka into a situation that he does not have the tools to resolve, where the Benders are able to do so with ease. Despite this, he feels useless because he hasn't done anything to help, even though we know that's not exactly the case.
Yes.
All right, let's go. Let's move on to Sokka for Sokka! Our characters.
So, just like the last episode focused on Katara and then Aang before that,
You keep adding that, and I feel so bad that, like, I didn't include that.
Got him. This episode heavily focuses on Sokka.
While the episode doesn't exactly present any new information to us on Sokka's character, it highlights everything we know about him in new and unique ways that are memorable and really speak to his specific skills.
Pian Dao probably puts it best with this quote.
Sokka, when you first arrived, you were so unsure. You even seemed down on yourself. But I saw something in you right away. I saw a heart as strong as a lion turtle and twice as big. And as we trained, it wasn't your skills that impressed me. No, it certainly wasn't your skills. You showed something beyond that. Creativity, versatility, intelligence. These are the traits that define a great swordsman. And these are the traits that define you.
And I just want to take some time to dive into some of these skills that Pian Dao listed. So we've seen Sokka be creative before with the multiple plans that he has made.
Yeah, in previous episodes, we've seen this manifest in the following ways. Like during season one in Winter Solstice, Part 2, Avatar Roku, when he uses the powder in the lamps to create fake firebending to open the doors.
His plandemic. Is Sokka Republican?
Oh my God.
Is Sokka QAnon?
Please don't freaking do that to me, Tyler.
I'm sorry. No, okay. During Sokka's plandemic of Pentapox to help the remaining citizens of Omashu escape the city in Return to Omashu.
And his plan of cutting through beams in the drill to stop it.
Even the haikus in Tales of Busing say.
But in this episode specifically, he's creative enough to find solutions to problems he might not have the resources to complete.
Like when he's painting, he can't remember what the landscape looks like, so he's able to create his own.
I think that's just, that's so endearing, and I'm in love.
Sokka, he's a man's.
Yes.
And we love him.
When he adds a rainbow to his painting for emphasis, most likely he doesn't know that the falls he's painting are known for their ability to create rainbows. I'm just like, your intuition is on point.
During Sokka's fight with his new master, Sokka manipulates the bamboo shoots in the forest to further impede upon Pian Dao's progress towards him, as Pian Dao notes.
Yes! Use your surroundings! Make them fight for you!
He is then able to fling dirt into Pian Dao's face, impacting his vision and giving Sokka the advantage.
Very resourceful.
Versatility in Sokka often presents itself in ways when his plans don't exactly work the way they're supposed to, and Sokka is able to instantly adapt.
Let's take a look at these and bask in their glory. So, in the Northern Air Temple, when Sokka and the Mechanist run out of stink bombs, Sokka uses the smell of rotten eggs, indicating the gas leak, which is a solution he helped come up with earlier in the episode. Then use the engine as a giant bomb around the temple.
In The Awakening, Sokka is able to adapt the invasion plan for the Fire Nation after they lose the support from the Earth Kingdom when it is overthrown.
Ugh. just like I'm swooning. In this episode, Sokka's versatility is exclusively shown in his perspective of his surroundings. Like, hear me out. During rock gardening, Sokka recognizes the rocks to be a relaxing design rather than one to fight within. He sees no threat, and he does not see the need to prepare for an attack, but rather an opportunity to kick back and relax.
You really took your time with that one, huh?
I took my opportunity to kick back and relax.
When he's fighting Pian Dao, he's able to use his surroundings to put himself at the advantage against someone with clearly more skill and power than him by fighting from a higher angle, making himself easier to defend and his opponent easier to attack.
Good use of terrain, fighting from the high ground.
I would just like to note that this is a tactic that I use frequently in Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn.
I would like to note this is the tactic that Obi-Wan Kenobi used against his former apprentice, Anakin, then turned Darth Vader.
No!
And he cut off three of his four limbs.
You were my father. That's not the line.
You were my brother, Anakin.
You were my brother!
I loved you. No, I hate you. I want to, like, make an edit now where, like, Pian Dao and Sokka are fighting and, like, you clearly see Sokka and Pian Dao, but mm-hmm. it's just using that, like, audio.
That, Tyler, that is called creativity at its finest.
Thank you.
Where are we now? Oh, yes. Sokka has shown himself to be intelligent consistently throughout the series through being able to strategically dissect intricate problems or discover important details that are useful later on.
And these examples include, in The Siege of the North Part 1, Sokka has crucial Fire Nation intellect that the Northern Water Tribe needs in order to successfully complete their plan of attack. They don't listen to Sokka and fail.
Wah wah. In the drill. In the drill, Sokka is able to look at a simple plan structure of the drill and is able to figure out how it works and pinpoint its weakest points that should be targeted.
And most importantly, in the library, Sokka is able to take a small piece of information, the darkest day in Fire Nation history, use his resources, the planetarium, to figure out what exactly it means, literally the darkest day in Fire Nation history because the absence of the sun due to an eclipse, and why it's important. He is able to come to the conclusion that similarly to waterbenders gaining their power from the moon, firebenders gain their power from the sun, and with an eclipse, they cannot bend.
That's, I feel like,
that's big brain energy.
Yeah, I feel like we all need to take a deep breath.
Like,
and process that.
That's my man's Sokka is so smart.
It all clicks. I see the gears turning, and it's just amazing. It is amazing.
I want to marry this man.
Same. Can we be sister wives?
Sokka exudes bisexual energy.
Oh my god!
So like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm so into that. What now? In this episode, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about being sister wives with Tyler. That's my dream.
See, and I'm thinking about Sokka. I don't even care about you. I'm like, oh, you're gonna spend time with your wife. Okay, let me know when you're back, babe.
Okay. In this episode, Sokka uses his intelligence to evade attacks, both verbal and physical, thrown at him. Like when asked to write his name, it can be assumed that different cultures have different written languages, which would definitely expose him as water tribe. Instead, he interprets what Master Pian Dao instructed him to do in order to cover his identity.
When you write your name, you stamp the paper with your identity. You must learn to use your sword to stamp your identity on a battlefield. Remember, you cannot take back a stroke of the brush or a stroke of the sword. You are getting ink on your face.
I am. So this is about putting my identity on the page, right?
Sokka uses this loophole to paint his face and use that as a mark of his identity, also saving the exposure of his true identity as Water Tribe.
When being physically attacked by Pian Dao during their fight, Sokka uses his younger age to his advantage against Pian Dao, an older opponent.
Excellent. Using your superior agility against an older opponent. Smart.
Finally, even Sokka's sword can represent these three qualities that Pian Dao has listed for him.
The use of a meteorite is creative, being a unique material that no one else has access to.
The idea of using a meteorite is versatile in that he's able to use materials and objects that are specific to his own experiences, and likely haven't been worked with before.
And it's intelligent for Sokka to use a material that only he is familiar with, putting himself on the advantage against anyone else he fights.
That's hot. You can wield that meteorite sword.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. Okay. Who's next? Oh, Catamaran!
Cataracts!
Okay. As the group talks about how they miss Sokka, it's often Katara trying to fill in what his role would be. And I'm sorry, but Katara, you're not good at it. I'm sorry. You're not. Like, and like, for the record, it's not because, like, she needs to... she feels the need to replace him. Like, I don't think that's it, but rather that, like, she's his sister, so she's closest to him, and that, therefore, she's more, like, qualified to take on his act.
Yeah, but you're right. She's so
no,
not good
no,
at
it's
it.
Not.
Like,
Katara, stop.
I have to stand how terrible she is at this.
Plus, it's so hot today.
How hot is it?
I don't know. Real hot?
It's so hot. It's so hot. Momo is shedding like Appa. Huh?
I guess the jokes don't run in the family.
Oh, everyone's a critic.
And that's it for her because she's bad at comedy.
She ain't no John Mulaney.
She ain't no Nate Bargatze. My girl Toph. Yeah. So when Sokka returns to Team Avatar and everyone is excited to see him, you know, Toph acts super nonchalant. But when she turns around, we can obviously see that she's blushing. Like, she's crushing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And this is another hint, obviously, towards the romantic connection between Toph and Sokka. And I don't know, I might be jealous of Toph a little bit. I'm not going to lie. But okay. I do like that for her.
Okay, go off. Yeah. Let's talk about P and Dao.
Yeah.
So many of the side characters, like June and the Pirates, were modeled after friends of the creators of the show, Break. They stay in Avatar, the art of the animated series. We always wanted to model a character after Sifu Kisu, the martial art consultant slash choreographer for the show. But it had to be just the right one. When the talented and wise swordsman P and Dao was developed as a mentor for Sokka, Kisu perfectly fit the part.
Break even ended up using swords from Sifu Kisu's vast collection for the props in Sokka's Master. Brian Konietzko notes, "They were ornate as far as TV animation props go, but I thought it was worth the extra effort to make these particular weapons look special."
P and Dao also clearly knew that Sokka was Water Tribe before agreeing to teach him, as he mentions at the end of the episode.
"Of course, I knew from the beginning that Sokka was Water Tribe. You might want to think of a better Fire Nation cover name. Try Lee. There's a million Lees."
"But why would you agree to train someone from the Water Tribe?"
"The way of the sword doesn't belong to any one nation. Knowledge of the arts belongs to us all."
By teaching Sokka sword fighting despite knowing he's not from the Fire Nation, Pian Dao is committing treason against the Fire Nation.
Pian Dao is putting himself at great risk here for the overall benefit of the world, but at the end of the episode, it perfectly reveals why.
We learn that in the desert, Iroh is part of a cryptic group called the Order of the White Lotus. Let me say that again. The Order of the White Lotus. Their main goal is to help others regardless of their nationality.
After seeing the White Lotus on Pian Dao's door, we can assume that he is also a part of the same group.
And when Pian Dao gives Sokka a White Lotus tile, which most likely represents an invitation for Sokka to join the group as well.
Although Sokka totally doesn't know this.
Okay, I'm sorry. I love this. I love how Pian Dao is like, "Join this secret society, Sokka." And Sokka's like, "Hey, a Pai Show tile. I wonder what that means."
It's a nice souvenir.
He's like, "Oh, why would he give me this?" I think that's so funny.
I do love it for him, though. Ugh.
Speaking of White Lotus, that's a group that Iroh's a part of, and we're going to talk about him next.
We're going to talk about Iroh?
We are. You know, after not seeing any of our Fire Nation main characters the last episode, we only see Iroh in this episode.
We do. From what we can understand as a viewer, he's trying to put on a fake front that he's much more insane and weak than what he actually is, meanwhile working out to get himself into shape. So obviously, he's been doing that for a while now, because as the episode shows, it's at the end of the episode, he just like rips off that shirt and is just like,
he's
busting out.
Oh,
he is busting
out.
Tyler, he's getting those gains every moment of every day.
Iroh went from a bear to a daddy.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
You said it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And I mean, the viewer is left to question what the point behind Iroh doing this is. Like, mm-hmm. is he just doing this to give his day some substance, something to do? Why is he hiding, working out from the guards? Why is he leading on the guards to believe that he's crazy?
Ooh, good questions. Or is there a specific reason he's doing this? And all of it's just fitting into plan.
I think you know who my favorite character was. It was Sokka.
Oh my god!
like, duh. I mean, same as the last episode, which was all about Katara, and the one before that, which was all about Aang. This one was all about Sokka. So it's like, he's the one to like this episode, you know? Like, he's my boy.
Yes! We got it. We got it. Yeah, Tyler, I concur. Sokka is my favorite character. This episode, of course. I do really appreciate Pian Dao in this episode. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really great master. But, of course, this is Sokka's time to shine.
Yeah.
And he stepped out into the spotlight and he gave it his all. And I gotta say, I'm in love.
Me too.
I'm in love, straight up.
Me too. Serena, I gave this episode... okay. I have a very long explanation for this, so let's just, like, let me get into it. I'm sorry. I gave this episode a 9. Yeah. I felt really, really conflicted about giving it this rating.
Really?
Yeah, so I really had to think about, like, why I liked this episode so much more with than the last one. You know, I really had to, like, ask myself if I had any, like, unconscious biases, or, like, misogyny or sexism that made me, like, not want to give these episodes the same rating. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, the Painted Lady is all about Katara and Sokka's Master is all about Sokka. So, like, why did I like the episode about Sokka more than I liked the episode about Katara? So I really had to, like, confront these, like, potential biases I may be feeling. But I came down to the conclusion that I felt like the Painted Lady was rehashing / redoing something that we've already seen done in an episode before.
I'm snapping.
Where Sokka's Master is giving us something new and different that we haven't seen before. It feels similar to The Warriors of Kyoshi, but the themes in that are different in that they focus on Sokka's misogyny, mm-hmm. and there's a heavy, heavy portion of the episode focused on Aang and Katara. So it's not really Sokka's episode. This episode is similar to Katara's in that, like, it's telling us things that we already know about Sokka, but it's different in the way that it's creatively done and his traits are manifesting in ways that we haven't seen him use before. So ultimately, I feel like this episode is just doing more in that it's written more intricately and it's not a rehash of something that we've already
seen.
Right.
I really agree with that. Tyler, would you like to know what I gave this episode?
I do.
I also gave it a 9.
Yes!
I know!
Oh, yeah! I love that!
Yeah, I also gave it a 9. I think that our first agreeance? No, Awakening was our first agreeance.
Yes,
because we both gave it a 10.
Awakening was the first one we agreed on.
No, I totally agree. And I also thought, you know, too, I was like, you know, as a woman, like, why do I like this episode more than Katara's?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you really hit the nail on the head. You hit the head on the nail? You nailed the head.
Nail on the head, yeah.
You slept your bread and now you're going to lie in it.
Slept your bread?
Oh, no, you buttered your bread and now you're going to lie in it.
I feel like those are two completely different things.
Don't question it.
Okay.
You can blow up that bridge when we get there.
Oh, my God. It's burn that bridge when we get to it.
Is it now? No, I really appreciate, because like what you said, in Katara's episode, The Painted Lady, we are exploring what we already know of Katara's character. We're mm-hmm. just seeing her manifest that in a similar way that we've seen before, however, just in a deeper meaning.
But like, we're seeing things that we already know about because Sokka's character here too.
Right.
But like, it's not manifesting in a way that we've seen before.
Right. We're seeing him go through a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas I feel like, you know, Katara didn't have to relearn anything about herself, Sokka here, he has to, like, dig into himself and relearn, like, his own worth. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's something that I personally really relate to, like, mm-hmm. knowing your own self-worth and, you know, being self-conscious about who you are and, like, what you're going to bring to the world. And I was just able to really relate to Sokka's journey that way, the adventure that he goes through with his spirit and his soul. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of this episode more intriguing, like with the White Lotus and with Iroh. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I didn't give it a 10 is because I cannot stand Katara's jokes.
Shut up. Oh, my God.
That is, like, the reason I did not give it a 10. Well, also in the fact that, like, Aang and Toph and... Oh, also, I don't know. I just, like, you guys. Like, you're... Get a grip. Like...
Yeah, they're
you guys,
like, so lost without
they, like, Toph and Aang and Katara were just, like, laying there. Like, yeah. It's hot. Yeah. I picked my toes.
Oh,
no, you guys. Guys, you're better than that.
I feel like I didn't give this a 10 because I hold 10s at a very high standard where this I'm like, really this good. Has to wow me mm-hmm. in one way or the other. And this episode didn't do that. It was just... Yeah. This episode is a 9 in the mm-hmm. fact that I feel like it's a very perfectly written episode and it does
yes.
everything it set... It accomplishes everything it sets out to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not go above that, you know?
You're right.
Where every 10 I give, I feel like it does... more than mm-hmm. what it's trying to, you know?
I agree. Yeah, I think your reasoning is completely sound, and I completely adhere to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... And I just, like, you know, because I was conflicting on what I was going to rate this episode,
mm-hmm.
Because I was watching it, and I was obviously enjoying it a lot, and then in the back of my head, I was like, oh, my God, it's so predictable. Like, of course, Pian Dao knew that he was from Water Tribe and all that kind of stuff, but...
Oh, I was thoroughly shocked.
Really?
When Pian Dao goes, like, I think I'm a little too old to be fighting the Avatar, I was like, what? What? Like, how did you know? And then he goes, like, of course, I knew Sokka was Water Tribe from the beginning. I was like, what? And then, like, when I see the White Lotus on his mm-hmm. door, I'm like, oh, my God, it all makes sense now. God damn it.
Yes. It's just, like, perfect writing.
Yeah. This episode does a great job with what it has.
Yeah, it really does. And, like, I totally, like, when Sokka, like, walked in and he was like, I'm not worthy. I was like, that's what you were going to say. That's what you needed to say, and you're going to be trained now. I already knew that.
I didn't know that, though. I thought he was going to be like, I'm a warrior and, like, blah, 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 blah. But, like, when he walks in and he's like, I don't think I am worthy. I'm like, who are you, Sokka? Like, what's going on, my boy? Like, come on, baby. Like, you got this. You are the best warrior of your tribe. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, this episode... I understand what you're saying, but you thought it was predictable, but I have to politely disagree.
I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was good. We gave it a 9.
Yeah, we both liked it for different ways, and I think that's what makes it so special and beautiful. And that's all we have for this episode. A huge thank you goes out to our producer and audio engineer, Aaron Bogan, along with our production company, Son of M Productions, and Annie Galloway, who made our cover art and is our graphic designer.
Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts because it helps more people find us
and spread the good word of the Avatar.
Don't forget to tell a friend about the show or share the show if you like it.
Please feel free to reach out to us. Our email is airbenderpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram, both at airbenderpod. That's A-I-R, Bender, P-O-D.
I'm Obi-Wan. I'm Serena Schreifels, the co-host of this show. You can follow me on Instagram as Serena_Schreifels. That's S-E-R-E-N-A _ S-C-H-R-E-I-F-E-L-S.
I'm Tyler Strandberg, the host, creator, and head writer of the show. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram, both at TylerJohn7. That's TylerJohn and the number 7.
Thanks for tuning in, you forest babies. We'll see you next week. Avatar out.
Baby Yoda listens to this podcast.
Baby Yoda, please listen to our podcast.